This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Hello, you're at AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, and this is the Matt McNeil Show. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt today, and looking forward to a really nice weekend. I'm liking that there's new stuff going on. Nice weather, that's new. We're going to be able to get out more, and we also have a new president. I'm going to talk about Joe's speech a little bit. But coming up later on, we're going to have some updates from inside the Minnesota legislative session. I was able to pre-record the schedules of the representatives and senators is absolutely crazy right now. They're working weekends. They're going deep into the night, sometimes into the morning of the next day. But I was able to, on Tuesday, get an interview with Representative Kelly Morrison. She's also a doctor, and she represents 33B out where I live, actually, kind of this southern part of Lake Minnetonka area. And we'll be playing that interview later this hour. And then next hour, we're going to play an interview that I was able to get on Wednesday with DFL Minority Leader Senator Susan Kent. And those were pretty enlightening and also predictable. But, you know, we get a verification from right inside MNLEG with a couple interviews to kind of spice things up. What I'm feeling really great about that's new is that President Joe Biden he's not mincing words. His speech was – you know, he was saying things that need to be said, like trickle down does not work. He said that the country has endured the worst attack on its democracy since the Civil War, talking about January 6th. You know, he's talking about things in a way that they need to be talked about. Everybody's been dancing around all this stuff basically for decades. Democrats have been dancing around everything, and now I think that I can imagine he and Barack Obama talking on the phone sometimes, and you know, former President Obama kind of saying, "Joe, look, don't do what I did. You can't trust those people. You can't work with them." You know, and I imagine that Obama's a little bit frustrated because it's like, "Oh, I should have done what Joe's doing," because Joe's just taking it to him. But it was pretty unbelievable. I thought he did a really great speech myself. I think a lot of our listeners here agree with me. And I also think it's funny how he's proving the GOP's theories on him are wrong, one by one. It started last summer, you know, with the whole Sleepy Joe, the name-calling Trump, you know, the little bully on the elementary school playground name-calling. They called him Sleepy Joe. They don't really call him that anymore. They've said he won't come out of his basement. He's addled. Kamala's going to run she's going to be the real president. She's going to run the White House because, you know, he's got dementia. He can't even get through a sentence. And I will admit that I was a little on edge during the convention last summer when it was time for Joe Biden's speech. I think a lot of us were because, you know, he had gotten to be known as just saying what's on his mind, a little, you know, the big effing deal, which of course I think is great. Maybe a lot of people don't know about that, but when President Obama got the ACA passed, Joe Biden, as vice president, introduced him basically when he was going to make the announcement about it. And, you know, right after he introduced him, as he was kind of passing the podium over to Obama, you could hear the microphone picked up Joe Biden saying, "This is a big effing deal," but he said the actual word, and you know, that's where he got the name Uncle Joe and all of this kind of stuff, and it just seemed like, you know, he was a little off his game. Of course, he wasn't in politics for a few years. And by last summer, it was, you know, it was a little shaky. Like, okay, we have our nominee. Now he's going to do a speech. I haven't seen him do a speech for years. And he did that speech at the convention, and I just really thought he did an incredible job. He doesn't trip. He's sharper than I am, basically. But also other things that they were saying about Joe Biden was the economy's going to get even worse the moment he's sworn in. And, of course, the stock market's going to crash the moment he's sworn in. And now just this week we're finding out about more than 6% growth in the economy, the quickest and biggest growth basically since FDR. And that's where I think Joe's going in the form of FDR. I hosted this show, sat in for somebody. I can't remember for who. In November, I believe it was, and I was talking about this. I know not to say I'm the only one who has, or that I'm the only one who's thought of this, but. Franklin Delano Roosevelt had the most ambitious plans for America, and of course the conservatives were fighting against it because it was spending too much and all of this stuff. And this is before World War II, where FDR was implementing plans like Social Security and things like that, and it was the most ambitious sort of big government. You know, government is coming in to make things right. What do we need a federal government for? We need a federal government to do things that independent people or even large corporations don't have enough resources to do. That's why Abraham Lincoln, knew we needed to use the federal government if we were going to be able to have roads go through other states. We were coming off of the independent state mentality by the way, President Lincoln was called a liberal back then. So he was not a conservative. The conservatives back then were the Democrats, of course. But long story about how that changed over, and it took about 100 years for it to change over. Then FDR came in with the biggest federal government plan, and he was reelected 3 times. He was on his 4th term when he passed away, and it was basically – that's the reason that we have the term limits for the president, because the Republicans realized that if we didn't have term limits, they were never going to see the White House again. The Democrats were in the White House for 20 years before President Eisenhower got elected, and Eisenhower, he kept up with the big government. He built the interstate freeway and highway system. So, it was basically a progressive movement going on for more than 20 years, more like 40 years. So Joe's going in that direction. And when he was doing his speech, it was, it's not a State of the Union when the president's in their first year. It's just an address to both houses of Congress. So it's the Senate and the House get together and listen to the president kind of giving them an address. And oftentimes it has to do with a lot of foreign policy, talking about what the problems are in foreign policy, which I thought that was really interesting too. But some of the things that he was talking about in the families plan and the jobs plan that he's trying to get passed he talked about we've already done 2 million vaccinations, and the GOP just sat. They sat on their hands. So the tradition is for when there's something that's good, everybody stands up and applauds for a little while, kind of recognizing, yeah, this is a good thing. So apparently the GOP does not think 200 million vaccinations within the first 100 days is a good thing, even though some of them were criticizing Joe Biden for setting the goal of 100 million vaccinations in his first 100 days. He more than doubled his original goal, and they still don't think it's a good thing. When he talked about that cutting child poverty because of the stimulus bill, child poverty has been cut in half but the GOP sat. They didn't apparently think that was a good thing. Getting rid of lead pipes, the GOP sits. Clean water, the GOP sits. Internet to rural areas, the energy grid improvements. Even when Joe Biden was talking about jobs, 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 this bill's going to – and he did a really good, thorough explanation of why this was going to turn into jobs. But still, they sat on their hands. 500,000 power stations for electric cars, farmers' subsidy. Why are we – you know, why would we let new energy items like windmills be made in Beijing instead of Pittsburgh, you know? So President Biden says, you know, we should make those in Pittsburgh instead of Beijing. The GOP sits. They don't think that's a good idea. I mean, I have a list here that I'm realizing is going to take me way too long to go through. I was writing it down during the speech because I was just so dumbfounded that the GOP just kept sitting down. So, yeah. Anyway, I won't go through the rest of that list, but the response by the Republicans, then they had Representative Tim Scott, and he the thing the Republicans always do in these rebuttal speeches after a State of the Union, first of all, they put up who they think is going to be their new rising star. And their new rising star has apparently never spoken into a camera before in their lives, because every rising star – I mean, you think Jody Ernst was one of them. I should have wrote down the list of names. So many – Marco Rubio was one of them. He was the one who, you know, couldn't get through it without a desperate drink of water. So they all basically make fools of themselves. But on top of that they say all kinds of things that the president said that the president didn't say. So it's as though they pre-wrote their speech, which is understandable, but they didn't adjust it at all to actually react to what the president was saying. I remember once I can't remember his name. He was from Louisiana, and he was talking about volcano meters or something. Well, you know – that was in rebuttal of a Barack Obama speech, and you know Barack Obama didn't say anything about volcanoes, but so they add all these things that the president never said, but they're still saying the president wants this, and I don't understand why they do that. I got to say that it's not both ways. The Democrats have done a much better job of doing those rebuttal speeches. The Republicans, I don't know. I really think that they've lost touch. I think they're scared of basically the American people, so they don't know how to react when they know that they need to be talking to the American people. They kind of freeze. They write down some stuff. They read it out of a teleprompter. They try and act like they're gracious and caring, but it really looks like they're trying to act like they're gracious and caring, and it never works out. And they have their newest rising star then just completely tanking, and usually are – I mean a lot of them are even out of office within 2 years, and they basically just fade. I mean, where's Marco Rubio now, you know? So anyway, why don't we get to playing the interview with Representative Kelly Morrison? We'll take a break first, but then I want to play my interview from this last Tuesday with Representative Kelly Morrison. She's going to give us a little bit of an update on what's going on in the Minnesota State House. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. And we'll be right back with Kelly Morrison's interview. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil today. And so last segment, I was kind of ranting a little bit there. But we're going to change it now to an interview with Representative Kelly Morrison. I met Kelly back in 2017. And back then I was working with the DFL. I ran for the House out in my very red district in years gone by. And I was still working and I was in charge of kind of trying to find new candidates and met Kelly and realized she would be a stellar candidate if I could only talk her into running, which I did. I think she still kind of holds that against me. But she has she won her first election. She did turn out to be an absolutely stellar candidate and then a stellar representative in the Minnesota House. This session alone, she's written 45 bills this last I checked, which was Tuesday. I think they're all written now. So, yeah, she's written 45 bills this session alone. And she's been a really hard worker in the Minnesota State House of Representatives. I was able to talk to her on Tuesday afternoon, and she was giving us a little bit of an idea of what is going on. So why don't we listen to that interview right now?
We're here with Representative Dr. Kelly Morrison. You're in your second term. You had a historic election in 2018, and we have never had a Democrat out in this area in the State House in the history of Minnesota. You're the first one. And then you got reelected in 2020 because you're doing really great work. And there was a little bit of troubles with DFL getting through this election because of the pandemic, but you still prevailed. So thank you so much for being here. You keep texting me that things are just nuts. Can you just give us a couple words about how nuts it is?
It's an honor to be with you, Todd, my original mentor on this political journey of mine. So this is really fun to have a chance to talk.
Thank you. That's very, I'm honored to have you feel honored. So it's just nuts. You're working on Saturdays and Sundays. You're working through the night. Last night was an 11-hour debate on the Health and Human Services bill, which you played a big part and got some of your bills included in. Would you like to elaborate on some of that?
Sure. And you're right. This time of session is always very busy. It's kind of nonstop. It's interesting and exciting and frustrating all at the same time. But we did manage to pass a robust Health and Human Services omnibus bill last night that I'm really proud of. It has a lot of great provisions in it, including a couple of mine that I'm very proud of. Obviously, maternal and child health are kind of near and dear to my heart as an OBGYN by trade. And so when, you know, we've always prided ourselves on having low uninsured rates in Minnesota. We pride ourselves on the healthcare that we deliver, but we also have some really significant disparities in our state. And we've had this oversight for years where we allow women who receive their insurance through medical assistance to be insured only 60 days or 2 months postpartum after having a baby. Mm-hmm. And with the disparities in maternal and infant mortality in our state between Black and American Indian mothers and their white counterparts, this is one piece of the puzzle to try to address those disparities. This is a big issue in greater Minnesota as well, where a large number of our new moms are covered by medical assistance. So this bill will extend that coverage for a year postpartum. So the best way for new babies to get off to a great start in life is for their mothers to be healthy and thriving. And so I'm really excited about that. And we've been working for several years on it, and we've developed great bipartisan support. So I'm optimistic that Minnesota is going to take this step and cover new moms for an entire year postpartum.
That's excellent, an entire year. It also helps for moms to be with their babies. So we're still working on paid family and medical leave, but that's
also
you. So you're also, of course, being a doctor. Back when we ran your campaign, the motto was "Let's put a doctor in the house," and we got one in you. Very, very rare. Are you the only doctor in the house right now?
I currently am the only physician in the House. There is another physician in the Senate, Dr. Matt Klein, but our doctor's caucus has shrunk to just the two of us at this at this point. Yeah.
Right. So you're in Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee, Health Finance and Policy, and preventative health policy as committees that you sit on. But you're also on the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee, which I know you are very passionate about. You're the author of The Lawns to Legumes, which actually got noticed by Oprah, if you remember that.
That's right. That's right. It's always exciting to have Oprah take notice. Well, you transform your traditional lawn into pollinator-friendly habitats with by planting native plants and pollinator-friendly legumes.
Yeah,
exactly. And the other thing that's great about the Lawns to Legumes program is that there's a big educational component and a raising of awareness. You know, a lot of us just march about our lives and we don't realize that the lawns that we've all come to take as normal, particularly in some of our suburban areas, some of our urban areas as well, you know, we mow them with gas-powered lawns, we fertilize them, that fertilizer runs off into our lakes and rivers, and we use pesticides, and all those things are detrimental to our pollinators, and we've had this crash in our pollinator population. Pollinators are crucial to our food supply, so this is a way for us to create corridors through urban and suburban areas. And science has shown us that even small little plots of pollinator-friendly areas can really help boost our pollinator populations. So it's been a really successful program. Even people who haven't had won grants, and these are small grants to help start the transformation of lawns, have done it on their own because they've learned from the educational component of the program.
Yeah, I saw there's even more people who, because of the program, have decided to do it on their own, even without the grants.
Exactly, more than that
did it with the grant. So it's doubled, basically, if you so to speak. And it's also getting national attention. So it's your legislation. And again, you make Minnesota an example for the rest of the country in a good way, which we've been having trouble with lately.
That's for sure.
So how do you feel in general about how the session is going? How do you feel about the participation of those from across the aisle?
You know, Minnesota, again, has this sort of unique claim to fame of having the only divided legislature in the country. And that makes lawmaking challenging. There's no question about it. We're living in really partisan and divided times in a lot of ways. On the other hand, if you look at what we got accomplished last session in the divided legislature under pretty unprecedented circumstances, we actually got a lot of good policy done. So I'm an optimist at heart, and I remain that way, that we always, it's cliche, but it's true. We as humans have way more in common than we don't. So we will find our way to crafting a budget for our state, and we will find a lot of common ground.
Good. Well, you're so good at that type of thing. I know if I ran before, and if I had been there, I would have a lot of enemies, I'm sure.
I don't believe that.
Well, you're very patient, and you always are on the positive side of things, and I think that's a very good thing to have in the House, especially these days when everything can turn into such a mess. And I'm going to let you go because I know you have a crazy schedule. If there's anything more that you would like to add, please do.
Well, thank you, and thanks so much for having me, Todd. This was fun. I'd love to just hang out and talk politics all afternoon. But I do have to get back to session, and we have a couple of things I think we have to vote on this afternoon. But I guess I want to end by telling people to stay positive and to stay engaged. You know, we've lived through history in our state these last few years. And I just believe that we are going to come out better and stronger. We have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of equity work to do. We have a lot of reform. We've got a tall order, but I think we're up to it, and I believe in the people of Minnesota.
Yes, that's a great note to end on. So everybody be inspired by Dr. Kelly Morrison, who is a state House representative out here in 33B, where I live, just south of where I live, actually. But my small business is in your district, only about a mile from here. So again, thank you so much, Representative Kelly Morrison, for joining us on AM 950.
All right. That's my interview with Kelly Morrison from this last Tuesday. She said she had to go vote on some things that day. And one of the things that actually got passed on the House floor was some police reform. And we'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson. Please stay tuned, and we'll be right back. To AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. That was my Robert Plant imitation. Trying to do it quietly, though, it's really difficult. If you would like to call here into the show, the number is 952-946-6205. I will not accept any calls where you want to make fun of my Midwestern accent. As I was listening to the interview that I did with Kelly, I was listening instead of actually talking, and I still haven't – back. I went to Brown Institute for Broadcast a long time ago and was on the radio, and I fought my Midwestern accent really hard. If you, listen to like my brothers and my dad, he's passed now, but they just kind of talk like this, And I thought I got over it, and I only made it about halfway. So I was really surprised how much of a dork I sounded like on that interview. So I will not accept any calls where you're going to make fun of my Midwestern accent. But if you want to talk about something else, maybe about Kelly Morrison herself, feel free to call in at 952-946-6205. One more thing I was going to point out about Kelly Morrison and her hard work, and it's not just her, because I get emails from a few legislators, and what I've noticed is the Democrats during sessions send a legislative update emailer at least once a week, a couple of them maybe twice a week, including Kelly Morrison. So I live about a mile north of where Kelly. Her district that she represents, my legislator is Jerry Hertaz, and he sent it maybe once a month does he send a legislative update emailer. And Kelly even sends one, I would say, once every 2 weeks or so, even when session is not in. But my representative, Jerry Hertaz, he's making no news. And so I don't know. I wish I could vote for Kelly, but I have to vote for the person. Well, I'm glad to vote for the person running against Jerry Hertaz, which once upon a time was me. So I guess I shouldn't talk. I couldn't beat him, right? But anyway, Kelly, during the interview, she mentioned that she had to run because they had to do some more voting. And that was Tuesday afternoon. And one of the things that I believe she had to go vote on was something that's called sign and release warrants. It's a police reform legislation that really makes a lot of sense. The DFL House is able to pass things like this. They were trying a second bill to try to avoid the type of confrontation that led to Dante Wright's death in Brooklyn Center. It would require judges to issue, quote unquote, sign and release warrants instead of arrest warrants. So, for instance, Brooklyn Center DFL state representative Samantha Vang, she says about the bill, although this bill may not solve all the specific issues relating to police brutality, this bill could have prevented Dante Wright's death. Dante Wright's arrest warrant was for a gross misdemeanor weapons charge. This would be used in – so this new legislation, this sign and release instead of arrest – would be used in misdemeanor cases, not felony cases, obviously. For felony cases, it's still an arrest. But for misdemeanor cases, what would happen is the officer would pull you over and then give you basically a warning saying, hey, you need to show up in court. Hey, we have this warrant out on you, so you need to do this. It's basically telling them what they need to do. For instance, also Dante Wright, he didn't really know about his arrest warrant because it was sent to the wrong address. So when he was pulled over, you know, he was scared. And going on about the bill, Vang's co-sponsor on the bill, Representative Jamie Long from Minneapolis, he said about the bill, quote, the goal is to lessen the number of police interactions where they need to take someone into custody to lower the temperature whenever possible. And we've definitely seen that we need to lower the temperature whenever possible. By the way, a Republican state representative from Elk River, Paul Novotny, he agrees, saying that it's good public safety policy that would free up law enforcement to spend more time responding to emergencies. He goes on to say, an arrest warrant that isn't issued is one less trip an officer doesn't have to make to jail. It's one less report that they have to do, and it leads them to be available to respond to emergency situations. He also says it's the right thing to do because it's the right thing to do. That makes a lot of sense. It seems to me that our police officers, you know, our armed police officers should be spending their time responding to real dangerous emergencies. And there should be another way of handling these low-level things. Like, I don't see any reason why if your license tabs are expired, why they can't look you up and then send you something in the mail saying, hey, your license tabs are expired. This is your first warning. If we see you again, we're going to pull you over and give you a ticket or whatever. That's why he was pulled over, was because his tabs were expired. There was one Republican, of course, who said about Dante Wright in his reaction to this legislation, for like Elk River Representative Paul Novotny, who's a Republican, he voted in favor of this bill. But of course, we still have to hear from the token Republican voting against this very sensible bill, saying, it's unfortunate Dante Wright didn't comply and go to jail, and things would have been a lot different. So thank you, Representative Brian Johnson from Cambridge, for that hit over the head with a blunt instrument. As far as Representative Jamie Long said, we need to lower the temperature. What I've been noticing about all these incidents we've been seeing them more for 5, 6, 7 years because people start filming them on their iPhone. Like Philando Castile from 5 years ago now, almost 5 years ago, his incident, the police officer that shot him just pumped bullets into his chest. You know, he told the cop that he has a gun, he's got a permit for the gun, and then he was reaching for something slowly, and the policeman just panicked and started just unloading his gun into the guy. You know, I remember watching Starsky and Hutch when I was a kid, and that show was all about being big, tough cops, and they were very careful with guns. There was a lot of shooting in that show, but they were still very careful as far as when they were going to use their guns. They gave a warning shot, if that. You know, they didn't pull people over and get the gun out right away. I noticed in all of the footage in the George Floyd incident, you know, they were told that this guy passed a $20 bill of counterfeit, $20 bill, whether or not he even realized he was passing it. But when they went up to his car, they had their guns out. And, you know, Starsky and Hutch would not have even had their guns out. So, yeah, we need to lower the temperature. That's just police training, things like that. A lot of changes need to be made. It sounds like this particular piece of legislation is very sensible, and it sounds like it's got bipartisan support, which of course is a good thing as well. So it's time to take another break, and then we'll come right back for the end of this segment. Next hour, we're going to play an interview with DFL Minority Leader in the Senate, Senator Susan Kent. And you are listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil, and we'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil today. I think I might have did a little bit better job on my Midwestern accent, trying to get rid of it. Did Patrick, what did you think? Did I improve at all that last segment?
It's tough to tell. I think you might have improved on it a little bit, but I always think I don't have a strong one. And I'm like, oh, you got that nice Minneapolis accent. I'm like,
I know. It's hard. It's hard for us. So I still sound like a dork, according to Patrick. Oh, well. I wish I sounded like Michael Cohen, you know? I watched a bit of Michael Cohen today because, you know, there's all this big bust of Rudy Giuliani. Another, you know, more fun new stuff happening this week, which actually points to a lot of old stuff. But it was funny because Michael Cohen was on and he was just saying stuff like, yeah, Rudy, he's really stupid. He's really dumb, and he drinks too much. So he's going to say something. If I was Donald Trump, I'd be sweating right now. You know, it's just right out of The Sopranos. He was saying, people ask me why I work for Trump, you know, and why I didn't listen to my wife and my kids because they begged me every year. They said, why you got to stop working for him. Don't ask me why my moral compass took a dumpster dive. I thought that was a great line. So I can do a New York accent better than just a regular accent that's not tainted with Midwestern accent. But talking about some of this stuff, so the Rudy Giuliani mess that's going on, all of a sudden now we're talking about Lev Parnas again, from Lev and Igor, the two Russian guys who were working with the oligarchs and Giuliani and Bill Barr and Donald Trump. So all of this stuff, you know, it's not going to go away. These are things that feel like they took place in a whole different lifetime. For one thing, it was before the pandemic. And for the other thing, it was about 60 crimes ago. One thing about all these sort of amateur mobsters like Donald Trump is even if you do end up getting punished for one of your crimes, you're only going to get punished for one of them. So why not do 60 of them? Because then you can have fun doing the other 59 crimes. You're only going to go to jail for one of them anyway. It's like Al Capone went to jail for tax evasion. He never got convicted of murder or anything like that. So that's what all these people do. They just, you know, they know that you can only, and actually the more they do, the harder it is to get them on any one thing, because it's just such a huge, you know, things flying through the air. You don't know which one to grab to concentrate on. It's just one crime after another. Big news from one week is absolutely completely forgotten by the beginning of the next week because of what new crime happened over that weekend. But, you know, these things are going to new DOJ is in town. What we're seeing here is this is probably going to implicate Bill Barr, who was the attorney general under Donald Trump. The new attorney general is actually doing his job. Bill Barr was just simply trying to protect Donald Trump. I don't know why they're all scared of him, but this is going to get there was obstruction. It's very likely that Bill Barr is going to get some obstruction of justice charges because these warrants that ended up going through just this – I think it was Monday morning or something like that where Rudy Giuliani's house and office got raided. They were going on last year and they were blocked by the Department of Justice, and that means they were blocked by Bill Barr. And so it's very likely that these are going to implicate everyone up to Donald Trump as well. Who knows which thing will get Donald Trump first? you know, if anything. But I truly do think something is going to get him. I think, you know, either from Georgia or New York, all of these investigations going on. Michael Cohen, you know, he went to jail. I also like to – I think it's always good to look at history in cases like this. If you – well, not very many people remember Watergate. I barely remember it. I'm sure I'm the oldest one in the building here, probably older than the age of the other two people put together, and I can still barely only remember Watergate. I remember Watergate mostly because I wanted to watch Scooby-Doo on Saturday mornings, and it kept getting canceled because of the Watergate hearings. So that's how I remember Watergate. But I've studied it a lot because I was becoming a history buff even back then. But John Mitchell was the attorney general under Richard Nixon, and he went to prison for 18 months. But he didn't go to prison until something like May of 1977. So the actual crime that set off Watergate came during the election of 1972. That included the Watergate break-in. It also included all the shenanigans that Nixon was doing against his possible opponents in the election. And that was in the summer of 1972. The Watergate hearings began, I believe, in late 1973. And then he was going to be impeached. And so in order to not be impeached, he resigned. I think that was August 4th of 1974. So, you know, this is almost 3 years later that his attorney general, John Mitchell, went to prison. But he did go to prison. So we want something to happen. Also with the January 6th insurrection, you know, I think people are feeling like, man, you know, nothing's happening. Why? Well, things are happening. They've arrested something like 440 people. And a lot of these people are already getting going through the process of getting thrown in prison. And, you know, we'll see what happens with that. There may be, big congressional hearings, but a lot of people are going to go to prison, and that might also implicate Donald Trump. Those investigations and all of these people who are getting arrested are going to be witnesses. And how many of them do you think might say, you know, I did it because my president told me to do it. I thought it was the right thing to do. So we need to be patient. History shows us that, and it wasn't just John Mitchell. It was pretty much, well, you know, the book and the movie is called All the President's Men. Pretty much the whole, you know, all the top advisors, all the immediate White House guys, his lawyer. John Dean, he went to prison. Pretty much all of his advisors went to prison, but they were all going to prison at different times for the next 3 years or so. I remember seeing newspaper reports of, you know, another one of them getting thrown in prison, and then another one of them, Ehrlichman, and, you know, all these guys. So anyway, we're going to have to be forced into another break, and then we'll hear national news. And we'll come back next hour. I want to play you the interview I had with Senator Susan Kent. She'll give us an update on some things going on in the Minnesota legislative session. So you're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, and we will be right back. Yeah, that's me on guitar. Wait, listen to this. Oh, I'm fading out. Anyway, you're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil today. 86 degrees, Patrick says it's going to be tomorrow. And it's going to be a great weekend. And I also heard, I know Matt sometimes likes to do a bit of a COVID update. I heard today that there's pretty good news. The average new cases has been below 5 now for a little bit. That's kind of a goal, to be below 5. We had some surging going on a couple weeks ago, and the governor has said that it looks like we've weathered that surge of one of the variants. And also some statistics, 43% of Minnesotans have been vaccinated, people 16 and older. And I think they said something like 57% of Minnesotans have now received their first vaccination shot. So that's all good news. I wanted to talk a little bit about this incident that happened this last week where a sixth grader brought a gun to school in a middle school in Plymouth, Minnesota, which is a western Minneapolis suburb. He said he got it out of his dad's bedroom. He brought it to school. He shot it multiple times, apparently just into the ceiling, and nobody was hurt. But, you know, the lockdown goes into effect. Luckily, there was a plainclothes security person that was able to get the gun from the kid, and there was no incident except for, you know, the mental strife that there's one kid. I'm not going to name names, but they're like 13 and 14 years old. He said he heard shots during a passing period. I knew right away what the sound was. I just started running. There was so much adrenaline. Another kid said, you know, I think I just shut down. You know, all these reactions to it. Another kid said like 2.5 hours later, it's when her hands finally stopped shaking. And, you know, this is so maddening that we have to live with this. My daughter went through an incident. I can't remember if it was 3 or 4 years ago where her school, basically they got a new system for doing a lockdown, and they tested it one day and they came on and said, don't worry, this is just a test. And they said, you'll never hear this again. But then they said, you know, if you do, of course, then it's real because we're just going to do the test this one time. Well, the next day, the system malfunctioned and went off and started doing all the alarms through the school PA system. And it was a malfunction, but nobody realized it. The kids certainly didn't realize it. And, you know, so our daughter told us the story after she got home that day. And it was terrifying for us, too, because we heard something was going on and that there was a live shooting incident going on at the school. And it was absolutely insanely horrifying. And we didn't know what to do. And then we very quickly heard that it was a false alarm and a malfunctioning system. But the kids went through a few minutes of terror, absolute terror. In my daughter, they were all told to go back in the corner and crouch down to be underneath the window so that they can't – you go to the corner furthest from the door and crouch down so nobody can look in the window. And her poor teacher was standing behind her desk, you know, waiting to – she didn't know what to do either. She had forgotten her key that day, and another teacher in the room next to her remembered that. So he came over to lock her door. And when that happened, all the kids, they heard the jiggling of the doorknob, and my daughter and her friends, they thought that was it for them. They thought the door was going to open and the shooter was going to come through. Of course, it was just this teacher locking the door. But the teacher – normally, a teacher forgetting your key is just inconvenience because you need to get somebody else's key to lock your door when you leave that day. But that day, it was a life and death situation, and it just should not be that way. It's so incredibly maddening that there are so many guns in this country, period. I think we're finally going to be doing something in the next couple of years here, but the amount of shootings going on, the amount – so many of them in schools – the flags are at half mast and you don't even know why anymore. You know, it used to be because, President Nixon died or something like that. But now they're at half mast constantly and you don't know which incident they're at half mast for. And, it's very maddening and very insane. And it's even worse that we got to worry about a lot of the people who are using the guns are the police. Now, of course, there are a lot of great police, and I'm all for and thank first responders all the way around, police, ambulance, everybody. I'm of course, we need you all, but we have a lot to fix. We have a lot of attitudes to fix, and we need to have less guns in this country. I know guns by themselves sometimes actually do kill people. They can go off accidentally, but people kill people, but people without guns don't. I mean, that's not true either. You can use other things, but you know what I mean. I'm kind of digging myself a hole here, but I mean, there are too many people with guns that kill too many people. And it's just so maddening. Me as a father, realizing that these kids and the teachers and everybody has to go through this. Not to mention, a lot of the kids ran out to their cars. There was like a pickup truck that a bunch of kids jumped in and they took off to get away from the school. You know, what if that pickup would have crashed with all those kids in it? It was a mess, and that wasn't even an actual incident. But the fact that all these kids have this in their mind to go to school all the time, and the parents, I think about it too, you know. So I'm glad that the incident in Plymouth did not amount to any injuries. A few holes in the ceiling, but still, I haven't heard any talk about possible punishment for the father, who obviously did not have the gun stowed away properly. So maybe we'll hear more news about that in weeks to come. Why don't we take another break here? And when we come back, I want to play the interview that I had on Wednesday with DFL Senate Minority Leader, Senator Susan Kent. She works on a lot of family policy. I met her back when I was working as a small business owner at the Capitol a lot, trying to work on paid family and medical leave. And Susan Kent was the author of that for a few years running now. And so she's trying to get really good work done. And we'll hear from her when we come back. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil, and we are going to be listening to an interview that I was able to do, even though she has such a hectic schedule during this session. We're doing a little bit of an update on what's going on in the Minnesota legislature, and I was able to interview the DFL Senate Minority Leader in the Minnesota Senate, Senator Susan Kent. Let's listen to that interview right now. Here we are with the Minority Leader in the Senate, Senator Susan Kent, who you and I know each other from working on paid family and medical leave. Had a few meetings with you. I think you're a great voice and representative for things like that. And you're into a lot of sort of family issues, which I think is great. One thing also, now this has been a pinnacle week in Minnesota last week with the verdict in the Chauvin trial. It even caused the Minnesota GOP to react with promises to have hearings on police reform. But then they went back on that promise, saying it would be brought up in conference committee instead. Do you see there being meaningful, honest hearings happening in the Senate on this police reform issue?
Oh, I wish I could say yes. And I still hope that there will be. And, all of us who care deeply about trying to make these meaningful reforms know that we need to put pressure on them to do the right thing. But there's a lot of concern that trying to do this in the Judiciary Committee will in fact mean that it's behind closed doors and it will not give the full conversation. And I mean, I think a huge part of this is Republicans aren't listening to the people who are most directly affected by these issues, particularly people of color. And so that's why real hearings would make a difference. I think the House has had 13 hearings now. Mm-hmm. It's just not okay that we have not given Minnesotans the opportunity to speak in the Senate.
Yeah. I'm talking about 13 hearings in the House on this issue alone. I know there have been hearings and even bills passed in the House on some of your pinnacle issues as well. I know you're working around the clock. You're working weekends. You're working nights. I saw you had a virtual meeting on Sunday with a lot of people that you've been working with on your key issues. People Who Care, I was a part of that same coalition at one point. And there's a lot of people working on a lot of things, and the House is working on it. Things like child care, paid family and medical leave. Do you think that these bills, have they made any progress, or will they be brought forward in the Senate at all this session?
Well, we just passed the tax bill off the Senate floor, and all we have left for the omnibus bills now are the Health and Human Services bills, which we'll hear tomorrow, Thursday. And then we're pretty much done with the big bills. So the odds of those making it through are not great at this point. This has been a time of Republicans really drawing a very clear picture of what they stand for, what they are going to fight for, and what they're going to fight against. And paid family and medical leave is a big one. They're doing some support for child care, but nothing in a real significant way. They're really doing it as a form of supporting those businesses, which needs to be done. But we also need to do it in a more comprehensive way and also support families who are trying to afford child care. And those are just a lot of examples.
Yeah, well, and I think that the GOP, in my opinion, I am a small business owner, as you know, and I am for all these things. Truly, small businesses will benefit from things. Child care, we need our employees to be able to have child care. You know, small businesses like mine can't afford to provide it. Large corporations see the benefit in providing it. And when you say the Republicans are looking out for business, they're not looking out for my business. My business represents about 98% of the businesses in Minnesota being a small business.
You're exactly right. And what's interesting is when I meet with business organizations from around the state, issues about access to childcare, issues about affordable workforce housing, issues about access to transportation, certainly good schools and job training and higher education. These are the things that we are hearing from the business organizations. That's what they want. But you can't just do those for free. You know, I mean, all of those things. And that's why I'm so excited to hear this conversation changing coming out of the White House and President Biden and Congress. They are realizing and making the point that all of these things are just as much about our country's infrastructure and our economic success as roads and bridges are.
Exactly. I'm with you. I'm being very glad that it's happening at a national level. And speaking of that, some of the things that the Republicans are doing here in Minnesota seem to match a lot of the issues that are being talked about nationally. I know that Republicans in the Minnesota Senate are supporting an amendment that will not allow transgender students in sports. I know my very honorable Senator, Dave Osmek, he authored a bill to make it a more harsh punishments for people arrested while protesting or even just gathering. So they seem to be trying to sneak some voter suppression bills through as well. Are these written outside of state? Are these kind of like ALEC? We haven't heard about ALEC for a few years. Is this an ALEC operation?
That's a really great question. And ALEC certainly operates a little bit in the dark of night. So it's hard to know exactly what they're doing, but you see commonalities across different states. And that's often the clue. You know, in the case of some of the things that are being proposed for elections here in Minnesota, bringing in provisional ballots, that's really going to, that's something that already exists in a bunch of states, but we don't have it because we've had same day registration. This is specific to Minnesota in that sense, but obviously all of these efforts at trying to limit who gets to vote is something that we are seeing around the country, including here in Minnesota, where we, famously have the only divided legislature in the country.
Yeah.
And your Senator Osmek's bill about protest, it's really just depressing because, that's about attacking basically the right to free speech and then penalizing it by saying that if you're convicted of an offense in protests, you would be prohibited from getting college student loans and grants, rent and mortgage assistance, unemployment benefits, business grants, medical assistance. It's just it's so severe.
Yeah, and it seems like he knows, and well, I don't know that he knows. I don't really not to be mean, but I don't give him credit for knowing much. But I think he and a lot of Republicans know that a lot of this stuff would never stand up in a if it went to the Supreme
right.
Court. It would not. It's not it goes against. It's not only not constitutional. It's blatantly against the Constitution.
Well, I will say real quick, Todd, that you know, one of my sort of things that I do in my own head is try to decide, are they doing this because they believe in it and they think it's the right thing to do, or are they doing it because it cranks up the outrage machine and they feel like they can fundraise off of it?
And they're scared of Trump. They're still scared of me.
You're good at that.
my wife and daughter don't want me to do it anymore.
But I can imagine that would be triggering to live with.
Exactly. Yeah. If people go into convulsions. How about if we switch to maybe what you're feeling positive about this session? What do you feel that we made some good progress on?
So this is always a hard time to ask that question, because when you're in the minority, we're coming up to the end of about 2 weeks of something just positively dystopic. I mean, all of these Republican budget bills are just generally so bad. You know, they can take us backwards in our environment. They mm-hmm. absolutely will not help us meet the moment and the challenges that our schools are facing. Housing, childcare, like we've talked about, there are just so many places where we're not doing what we need to do. And then there's the bad stuff that's being done to the environment, or like you say, attacking trans kids, which is just cruel. You know, I mean, there's no good reason for that. So that always leaves me in a pretty dark place. And so part of what looks good for me is getting past this, getting into negotiation, and knowing that when the bills come back after, negotiating with the House, and they're much more ambitious and mm-hmm. just, you know, proposals that are going to help Minnesotans, that's going to make me feel better. So it's the process. It's always, it's the sausage making of the legislature, but it will get better. And so we will have some good things to point to by the time we get done.
Maybe the weather. It's going to be like 80 on Saturday.
I know. It's going to be a warm weekend, and the sun's out right now for the first time in a while.
So that's something we can feel good about. But it is a blatant contrast between the DFL Democratic ran House and the Republican ran Senate. So we're all going to get out and make sure that changes. We're not going to have to not be able to door knock in 2022. So
that's right. We're all door knocking starting this summer. Let's put it that way.
Exactly. And I think if that happens, the DFL sweeps everything. So how about if I give you a very, I can't believe that you were able to find the time to do this. I just want to thank you so much. I know your schedule is insane. Especially right now, but that's what makes it even more interesting to talk to you. So thank you so much. It's so great to, I'm seeing you, even though this is on the radio, but thanks so much. And it's great to see you, and we'll maybe do this again sometime.
Great seeing you too, Todd. Thank you. It's always great to be on AM 950.
That was Susan Kent, Senator Susan Kent from Minnesota, the DFL minority leader, giving us a bit of an insight on what's going on in this session at the Minnesota legislature. Always difficult to be in the minority these days. For some reason, the Republicans refuse to work with anybody, and then they complain that it's the Democrats that are being divisive. On the national level too, they're doing the same thing, saying, you know, Joe Biden was going to bring the country together and he's further dividing us. Well, they're talking about elected officials in Congress. They're not talking about the country, because Joe Biden has united the country, but he hasn't united Congress. He never ran on uniting Congress. He ran on uniting the country. So we thank Senator Susan Kent for taking the time to give us a bit of an update on the legislative session in Minnesota. We'll take another break and come back. And I don't even know what to talk about. Maybe if you want to give us a call, you can call us at 952-946-6205. That's 952-946-6205. You are listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll be right back. Talk over this song. This is AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil, and we're hanging out talking about, well, tomorrow definitely for lunch, we got to make it to an outdoor place. Go to your favorite restaurant outdoors. We need to start, with the weather getting nice, we need to start supporting our favorite places again, especially if you're one of the 43% of Minnesotans who are fully vaccinated. Otherwise, wear a mask until you sit down. I'm fully vaccinated. I'm 3 weeks past my vaccination, so I'm good to go, but I still wear my mask.
I got my first shot yesterday, and it's been kind of an adventure.
Oh, yeah? What? Like how?
Well, late last night, I started getting kind of some of the side effects. I got some chills and some aches, and that's kind of mostly subsided today, but don't feel 100%.
Yeah, I've heard different reactions from different people. Some of them, my daughter just got her first on Wednesday. She said, I said, did you feel tired? And she said, I feel tired every day, so I don't think so. And my wife, Heidi, basically, she claims to have had absolutely nothing. I think I was tired, but on the day I got my shot, I decided to take the whole day off from everything, my small business. I was just going to be like, I'm not going to do anything. And I think that kind of psychologically threw me into you're kind of going into hibernation or something. But the weird thing I had was 2 weeks later, which is now about a week ago, I started to get kind of almost like a cotton mouthy feeling and lost a little of my taste. And I was wondering what was wrong with me, but then I realized, loss of taste, that's, sometimes a thing. I heard actually Stephanie Miller right here. I was listening to AM 950. I heard her say that she had that same thing about 2 weeks after she got her shots. So, or her first shot actually. But anyway, of course that was pretty easy to go through. It wasn't, it doesn't even sound as bad as what you went through, but most people I know, they're kind of saying, nope, I was fine, So no matter what your reaction to the vaccine is, it's a lot better than going to the hospital and dying of COVID. So anyway, get your vaccination and remain wearing your mask. Matt McNeil was talking about a thing that was going to go on tomorrow. This is switching the subject, by the way. He was talking about a thing that was going on tomorrow, this March for Freedom or something. This woman, I think her name is Lisa. You might have to walk me through this, Patrick. Lisa Miller, I think, is her name. She was basically a wanted fugitive because she was breaking the rules at her wine place that she owns or something like that. Either way, she was – she had an arrest warrant on her, and she was, on the run. She was like Bonnie and Clyde. She didn't shoot anybody, but she was a fugitive, a name that seems like it's only in movies or only happened in the 1930s. The only Republican Minnesota person who has announced that he's running for governor, Dr. Scott Jensen, he was going to be at this fundraiser for this fugitive. And another, Eric Mortensen, a absolutely crazy representative who ended up getting elected only because of a third-party candidate that ran and took votes away from Scott Mortensen's opponent. But anyway, some news on this. I heard even yesterday Matt McNeil was talking about, what's going to happen at this? What if Lisa Miller shows up and then the sheriffs show up And then you got, you know, some Republicans there who are toting their guns and, you know, what's going to happen? And turns out Lisa Miller got arrested. I just saw that before I drove over here a couple hours ago. I think she was arrested like last night or something. So now I don't know what's going to happen at that. This was an event they were having in Albert Lee. And it was going to obviously be a big event where these people were going to speak and they're going to try and raise money. And the currently only gubernatorial candidate for the Minnesota Republican Party was going to be there supporting this fugitive. Now that she's been arrested, I don't know what if they're going to cancel it or if they're just going to go there and it's going to be boring. That was a little bit of news there. Another thing people are talking about the immigration crisis. Well, the Republicans started ramping up that they were going to hit the Biden-Harris administration on the immigration crisis because it was a crisis back months earlier. Everything started changing when the weather changed. People were starting to try and come up. Starting even last like October and November when Trump was still president for a while longer, but he had lost the election. So they knew that Biden was going to be president and they started to plan already. You know, I'm sure Ted Cruz was like, oh, I'm going to get a cool mask and I'm going to get some camo. I'm going to get like a camo hat and I'm going to go down there and pretend like some drug guys are following me and stuff. And, you know, so they started planning for that back, you know, months before Biden became president, because this border crisis has been going on for a very long time, and Congress can't seem to move anything on it. Well, what the Biden administration is doing is they put Kamala Harris, the vice president, Kamala Harris, in charge of it. But what she's doing is she's addressing the core of the issue. She's talking to the problem countries that where everybody's fleeing from, which, by the way, they're fleeing from like Guatemala and places like that because mostly because of Republican things that started in the 1980s under Reagan, messing with those countries down there. Well, we took a vacation to Belize, which is right in that same area. Belize wasn't messed with by Reagan, and Belize is a wonderful place. They got their own little government down there. It's a really small country. It's beautiful. It's ran well, and then you got, you know, Guatemala and Honduras right next to it that everybody's fleeing for their lives from those countries. And Kamala Harris is trying to make some real difference where the difference can do some make some real difference, you know. So, again, Joe Biden handling things in the way that's going to make things work. And that's what scares the crap out of the Republicans. The Republicans basically, they realize that they need America to fail. They said this – I remember Rush Limbaugh famously said this when Barack Obama first became president. He said, you know, my friends, I want to make sure to see that President Obama is a failure. But then, of course, when Trump became president, he's like, the Democrats want Trump to fail. And if Trump fails, that means America fails. And so, you know, same old story with them. They need America to fail. And I believe that's why they've been telling people to not get the vaccine, to not wear masks. I think they would prefer for the pandemic to keep going and ruin the economy further, because all they're thinking of is power. That's all they're thinking of. When Joe Biden – the day Joe Biden was inaugurated, we were having about more than 4,000 people a day dying of COVID. And we're 100 days into Biden's administration, and we're down to a few hundred. Last I heard was less than 700 people a day. Now, that still sucks really bad, but bringing it down to – about 20% of what it was when he was inaugurated, I think, is a pretty big feat. And, of course, the Republicans trying to take credit for the vaccine, saying that, you know, oh, it was their whatever their dumb – can you say ass? I think you can say ass on the radio. Their dumb ass thing. Operation Warp Speed, Operation Warp Speed. And, you know, they always have these names for things that sound tough, but everybody in the Biden administration basically said when they came in there was absolutely no plan to get the vaccines into people's arms. So Pfizer said they were absolutely no part of the Operation Warp Speed. They did it completely, you know, on their own. They were working on it regardless. So the Republicans, they keep – they're wrong about everything. They keep trying to make all these claims. They're saying, oh, we're going to take the House back because Joe Biden's policies are so unpopular, when there's something like 67% of Republicans are all for the Jobs Act. And you know, overall polling is in the upper 70s into the 80s, and they're saying that these policies are unpopular. I don't know where they're, you know, I don't know what world they're living in. Are they in a parallel universe? I have no idea. When they look at the newspaper, does it say the same thing the newspaper that I'm looking at says? Because it doesn't seem like it. Right down to – there was a Clean Water Act passed by the Senate today. All of the Republicans except two voted in favor of it. So this Clean Water Act that's basically for clean drinking water, Mike Lee, who's a D-bag from dating back 10 years, and Ted Cruz, also a D-bag dating back 10 years, they voted against clean drinking water. So, you know, the GOP is wrong about everything, and they need America to fail. They seem to be anti-American. I think they really thought there was going to be a change on January 6th, I think. But the change that it seems like they're looking for is to knock down democracy. And Joe Biden talked about that a little bit in his speech. He was talking about autocracy versus democracy. And it's a little scary, frankly, that the Republicans still have this much confidence. It's like, what are they planning, and what do they know that, or what do they think they know that we don't know? And, you know, what are they smoking? I don't know. But anyway, you're listening to AM 950. And if you would like to call in, we have just a few minutes left, 952-946-6205, if you've got anything to say. I must be saying everything just exactly the way that you want, because nobody's calling in to correct me. And I must have improved my Midwestern accent, because nobody's calling in to make fun of me. So again, 952-946-6205. If you want to call in, you're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll take a short break and come right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. Matt's actually going to be back next week. He was going to be off next week, but he was going to have surgery today, but it got postponed. So I was going to be here next week, next Monday, but now I'm not. Matt's going to be back. So apparently at least another week, and then we'll see what happens. Hope he's doing all right. I think he was looking forward to getting this procedure done. But things are kind of messy during COVID times when it comes to procedures like that. I want to talk more about that Democrats. I'm glad to see that we're no longer afraid to do things and say things that need to get done and said, similar to back when the New Deal was put in place. Joe Biden is not afraid to say the things that need to be said, and it's looking like both he and Kamala Harris, Vice President Kamala Harris, are not afraid to do the things that need to get done. For instance, there's so many things that have not been taken care of. We're talking about the new census numbers. Back in 1929, when the number of House members were set at 435 Congress seats. there were 3,000 people in each district. Now, with this new census, there's 761,000 people in each congressional district. Does that not seem crazy? I'll answer that question. That seems crazy. And I don't know why we don't do this maintenance to our systems. You know, we can talk about it with the Second Amendment as well. That was written when the only weapon that they were talking about was a musket gun, you know. And we can't be afraid to update and upgrade things. We need to, you know, we need to have less people in each congressional district. The fact that Minnesota had our fingers crossed that we were going to lose a seat, even though the population goes up, we have less seats. You know, how insane would that have been? More than 760,000 people in the congressional district in Minnesota. So one thing that's good about the census is that the population growth is really slowed down a lot in the last 10 years. And that's good to hear because we have had a population problem actually in the world for a while now, which adds to the crisis at the border and things like that. Other things that and the Republicans, they stand against things when it's against them, but they stand for them when it's for them. So if you remember when President Barack Obama first took office and the whole birther thing, you know, was he born in the United States? And if he wasn't born in the United States, he can't be president. But if you remember back when in 2000, when the recall in California happened and Arnold Schwarzenegger got put in as the governor of California. Back then, many people don't remember that the Republicans were talking about getting rid of that part of the Constitution because they thought, you know, back then they were worried about, you know, like Tories coming in from Britain and undermining the presidency. Again, because the Constitution was written basically when we were in our Revolutionary War, or just right after our Revolutionary War against Britain, and we were still scared of that. Now, the Republicans in 2000 were saying we should probably let people who were not born in the United States be president. And, you know, it really seemed like they thought that Arnold, even though Arnold never learned to say California, you know, maybe they were thinking that he could learn how to say the United States. It's not a very good imitation, but you know what I mean. I think that they were vying for Arnold to run for president in, you know, sometime in the near future. They had him set up as governor, and so they're trying to drop that. Then also, when they were talking about statehood, there was a time where the Dakota Territory was going to be one state, and the Republicans worked hard to make sure it got split in half so that area would have four senators instead of only two because they felt like they were going to get the votes, you know. I shouldn't say Republicans. I should say conservatives. Back in those days, the conservatives were Democrats. But we're talking about conservatives versus progressives basically. Nowadays, obviously, Democrats are progressive and conservatives are Republican. But anyway, so I should be saying the conservatives were fighting for that. Now they're fighting against Washington, D.C. statehood because they know that Washington, D.C. is going to be a strong progressive area. And even though they completely broke the rules about letting Merrick Garland become President Barack Obama's choice in the Supreme Court. So very hypocritical that now they're you know, saying, don't pack the court, when in reality that's another thing that should be upgraded. Again, through history, originally each U.S. Supreme Court justice rode their circuits every summer. And after a lot of population growth and territorial expansion, it was decided by 1891 that this practice took too much of the justices' time, and the appellate courts were created to alleviate some of their burden. And what they decided was to have 9 appellate courts because at that time we had 9 Supreme Court justices. We have had as low as 5 Supreme Court justices, and there was a short period where I believe we had 10, but that was a very short period. But we were upgrading the amount of Supreme Court justices throughout the 19th century, and then it stopped. And even though the population has grown, and what else has grown? The amount of appellate courts. So in 1891, there were 9 Supreme Court justices and there were 9 appellate courts. You can also call them circuit courts. Well, now there are 13 appellate or circuit courts to reflect the growing U.S. population. Thus, it could be argued that it's not packing the court. Stop calling it packing the court. To have the number of SCOTUS judges to match the amount of circuit courts is not packing the court. It's just merely updating the amount of Supreme Court justices to coincide with the amount of appellate courts and because of the growth of the country and population and everything. So we need to do D.C. statehood. We need to have more seats in Congress. And we need more Supreme Court justices. And I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know if it'll happen during George Biden's administration, but let's begin. Let us begin. So anyway, I'll leave you with that. We have about a minute left. We've I want to compliment myself in that nobody has called to correct me on anything. And there's no time left. So that means I have a perfect record during this show. Nobody called to correct me on anything. Nobody called to make fun of my Midwestern accent. So please get out and support your favorite restaurant. Tomorrow's going to be beautiful. Go out for lunch and for dinner. Wear your mask. Get your vaccine. This is AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, signing off for the weekend, and Matt will be back on Monday. Thanks for listening, everybody.